Mystery Album, Part 3. A mystery album has fallen into my possession. The photos suggested belong to a wealthy, well-travelled, but thus far unidentified family. No doubt Puffins will help me to solve the puzzle, but first, two near-century-old Velux prints from the Stockton and Darlington Railway Centenary beg the telling of an interesting story. LNER number 2563 started life as an A1462 Pacific, designed by Sir Nigel Gresley and built in Doncaster in 1924. Number 2563 was named William Whitelaw, after the chairman of the newly grouped London and North Eastern Railway. Rebuilt as an A3 in November 1942, in British Rail ownership it was renumbered as 60064 and withdrawn from service in September 1962. None of the A1 A3s has survived into preservation other than Celebrity 4472 Flying Scotsman, later renumbered 60103. 4472 has been restored and was in steam as recently as the 22nd of August 2021 when it traversed the Celtic Carlisle Railway, hauling the Waverley from York to the border city. So much for the A1 A3s and 2563. But what of William Whitelaw the man? Another interesting story, best started with a disambiguation. The William Whitelaw in question was the grandfather of Viscount Whitelaw, Mrs. Thatcher's one-time Home Secretary and Deputy Prime Minister, who was affectionately known as Willie. A long line of landed Whitelaws of Garthshoe in Dumbartonshire served in Parliament and worked in industry. How so? Their ancestor, Alexander Whitelaw, was born in 1823, 2 years before the maiden run of George Stephenson's locomotion No. 1 on the Stockton and Darlington Railway. In 1859 he married into trade, his wife being Barbara Forbes Lockhart of the William Bairds and Company Coal and Iron Dynasty. Alexander Whitelaw was Conservative Member of Parliament for Glasgow between 1874 and his death in 1879. His second son, Graham, 1863 to 1928, was Conservative MP for North West Lanarkshire. William, 1868 to 1946, his third son, was briefly Tory MP for Perth after completing his education at Harrow and Trinity College, Cambridge. Away from politics, he was a director and then chairman of the Highland Railway, chairman of the North British Railway, and, when the NBR, HR and others were grouped together in 1923, the chairman of the newly created parent company, the London and North Eastern Railway. He was also the paternal grandparent of Willie, his son being William Alexander Whitelaw, Willie's father. Regular readers might recall being bored senseless by, en route to an iron ore mine in Arctic Sweden, the tale of half of my family fortune being wasted on an investment in the Rothbury Railway, one of the Duke of Northumberland and my ancestors' more over-optimistic get-rich-quick schemes. Sad to say, the other half of our country estate was reduced to clinker by the North British Railway. The silver lining, attached to black smoke billowing from a rickety engine, being correspondence with the NBR and subsequent LNER chairman, William Whitelaw, that has survived and sits in an attic deed box beneath my appropriately underused and underfunded model railway. Even before the First World War had ended, storm clouds were gathering over Britain's myriad of war-ravaged railway companies. As early as 1918, an ancestor had taken the precaution of joining the Scottish Railway Stockholders Protection Association, chasing bad money with good by parting with 5 shillings. To little avail, the North British stock was replaced with a stake in the LNER, which, at the nationalisation of the railways in 1948, after some more war ravaging, was swapped for British Transport 3% guaranteed stock. Based on the government's 1946 valuation of the companies, at that point our family stake in Britain's railways was worth an unimpressive £1.26. This investment generated 2 dividend payments a year of 4 old pence, on which you then had to pay income tax. As yet further proof that not much changes and gullibility is genetic, your humble author put his pennies into Railtrack when it was privatised in 1994. In the absence of a world war, 7 years later the government invented a new type of torture called Railway Administration under the Railways Act in 1993, which put yet further distance between myself, a hereditary seat in Parliament, and a society introduction benefiting from our own pig iron works. The Whitelaws of this world certainly, especially in the early decades of the 20th century, had it better than the rest of us. Or did they? Willie Whitelaw's parents, William Alexander and Helen Winifred Cumming Russell, married in St George's, Hanover Square, London, on April 14, 1914. all present in the John James designed 1724 Mayfair Parish Church, will have realised war was approaching as the Balkans chuffed towards the precipice. The bride, known as Winifred, was one of the Russells of Aden. Her father was the late Major General Francis Shirley Russell of Aden, military attaché to Berlin between 1899 and 1901, and Member of Parliament for Cheltenham between 1895 and 1900. Within months, the world was at war, with William Alexander joining the Argyll and Southern Highlanders. By October 1915, he was a second lieutenant. In 1918, he became both a full lieutenant and a father, with his son William Ian Stephen Willie Whitelaw being born on the 28th of June that year. Gassed during the war, William Alexander succumbed to his wounds and died of pneumonia on the 14th of February 1919, when his son was only 8 months old. William Alexander's younger brother, Robert Hilary Lockhart Whitelaw, was sent to the Western Front on November the 8th, 1916, after gaining a commission in the Royal Horse Guards. Robert's wounded near Arras on the 7th of May 1917 and died of wounds in No. 8 General Hospital, Rouen, on the 28th of May. He is buried in St. Saver Cemetery, Rouen, and remembered on the War Memorial in Liberton Cemetery, Edinburgh. The youngest of the three Whitelaw brothers, Geoffrey Lacey Whitelaw, is also remembered in Edinburgh on Loretto School's War Memorial screen. His citation reads, "To the glory of God and happy memory of Geoffrey Lacey Whitelaw, 2nd Lieutenant, 1st Life Guards Reserve, served in France May to October 1917, three times wounded, died at Edinburgh the 14th of April 1918 of illness contracted on active service, Loretto 1912 to 1916, Cricket 11, 1913, 14 and 15, Football 15, 1915 to 1916, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice," a tribute from the school. Loretto's Roll of Honour adds 2nd Lieutenant Whitelaw went to France in May 1917, was wounded on July the 15th and wounded again on August the 22nd. He was hurt in the leg on October the 12th but remained in action for a further 12 hours. The following year, now aged 19, after convalescence, Lieutenant Whitelaw was passed fit in March 1918. But just after this, he had an attack of enteritis and appendicitis. He was operated on, but after a plucky fight, died on April the 14th, 1918. Willie's mother's side of the family fared little better. Her brother, Drostran Arthur Cumming Russell of Aden, was an officer in the Rhodesian Rifles. Aged 23, he died of Blackwater fever on the 25th of July 1915, whilst on active service at Mutunitis village near Ndola in northern Rhodesia. Puffins, who sat beside a northern Rhodesian Copperbelt expat at school, have permission to skip the next paragraph. Ndola is the commercial and industrial centre of modern-day Zambia's, formerly known as Northern Rhodesia's, Copperbelt. It is the capital of the copper mining region and the capital of Copperbelt Province. It lies 6 miles from the border with the Congo, DR Congo, and 690 miles from Bulawayo in southern Rhodesia, Zimbabwe. In 1907, Rhodesian Railways reached Ndola from Bulawayo and continued laying track until connecting with the Benguela Railway, which led to the Atlantic coast at Lobito. Along this route, copper could be exported via the Congo and Portuguese West Africa, Angola. Although during the First World War, Rhodesian Railways were served by conventional but narrow-gauged 480 locomotives, by the middle of the next decade, coincidental with the centenary of the Stockton and Darlington Railway, Rhodesian Railways were taking delivery of Bayer Peacock 262 plus 262 Garretts. These engines were ideal for the long runs, poor fuel, tight curves and basic track in the Copperbelt and other far-flung parts of the empire. Although over 1,000 Garretts were built by Bayer Peacock, few were used in Britain. One of those that was being our final 1925 Cavalcade engine, LNERU1. Number 2395 was a solitary class U1 designed to bank coal trains along Wordsborough Bank on the Woodhead route between Sheffield and Manchester. Banking is a process whereby an extra engine is attached to the back of a train to help propel it up a steep gradient. The locomotive is pictured above, brand new, having just been delivered from Bayer Peacock Works at Gorton, Manchester. Although the company are long gone, parts of their giant locomotive works at Gorton Lane are still standing. There is a God in heaven, a divine symmetry, gives proof to his mighty works. Plus, he's keen on railways. Half a century later, after the mystery album photographs were taken, our final snap relates to the 150th anniversary of the Stockton and Darlington Railway, held at Shildon on August the 25th, 1975. George Stevenson, the designer of locomotive number 1, the first S&DR engine, was honoured by having Stanier Black 5 44767 named after him. Appropriately, the Right Honourable Willie Whitelaw, then MP for Penrith and the Border, and Deputy Leader of the Conservative Party, unveiled the plaque. Despite my continuing lowly social status, your humble author was on hand to take the photo with Mr. Whitelaw, ever the gentleman, kind enough to get out of the way when politely asked. With gratitude to the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, Loretto School, the Peerage.com, the Western Front Association, and Wiki.